Pearl Jam is 20 years old. Now, most rock bands don't make that milestone. Rock and roll can be a rough way to make a life. Cameron Crowe, the Academy Award-winning writer and director, was once an astonishingly young rock journalist, and he went to Seattle in the mid-1980s when he heard there was something he really should see there. His new film, Pearl Jam 20, which opens in theaters next week and will be seen on the PBS series American Masters on October 21, could be seen as his report card on what he discovered. Cameron Crowe joined us in our studios in New York, along with Kelly Curtis, the band's longtime manager. We asked what he heard when he got to Seattle.
I heard guys that knew the backgrounds, and this is a big thing in the movie. The guys in Pearl Jam really did study their heroes. They didn't just listen to the music. They studied the interviews, the way bands fell apart, the way bands stayed together. And Kelly, you noticed this too. Pearl Jam was built for the long run. And oddly, most rock stories that you hear start with great promise and somehow end in some tragedy, and it's all over. With Pearl Jam, the tragedy came early, and the next 20 years is about making good on a promise of staying together. Wouldn't you say that's sort of the structure of...
Yeah, there was a band before Pearl Jam, Mother Love Bone, that was the promised band, you know, there when thought was going to be the next big thing. And just overnight, that ended by the singer falling off the wagon and ODing and dying, you know? Mm-hmm. And
This is Andy Wood.
Yeah.
Yeah. From the ashes of that great band...
Came Stone and Jeff,
and later Eddie Vedder, and lightning struck twice, which never really happens in the careers of many bands.
Mm. One of the kind of founding stories of Pearl Jam is, this is a clip, Eddie Vedder, living in California at the time, got hold of a Mother Love Bone demo tape.
Mm-hmm. I was working a security job in San Diego. I was just like writing music in my living room for the longest time, you know. This instrumental tape migrated to me, and it really started bringing out some emotions that I hadn't touched on in a while. It just... this natural thing came out, and all I did was record it. I surfed in PB one morning after work and went and recorded it, like literally with the sand still on my feet and stuff, and just sent it up that day.
So Kelly Curtis, what happened then?
Well, Jeff said he got this amazing tape, you know, from this singer that none of us had heard about, and, you know, that I should come over and listen to it. And you know, it was a voice that none of us had ever heard before, a voice like that, and so it was crazy.
They say in the movie that the tape was so good that the guys sitting in Seattle listening to this tape from this young surfer in San Diego looked at each other and said, is this real? Is this a joke? Is somebody playing
that.
A joke on us?
Yeah.
Who is this guy? And they brought him up from San Diego, and 6 days later they were playing
our first
together.
Show.
Yeah.
Gosh.
It's a miracle situation.
Yeah.
Well, let's listen to a clip from that early time. This is Pearl Jam playing Alive, one of the group's iconic songs. This is, I'm told the date's December 22nd, 1990. Happens to be the day before Eddie Vedder's birthday, and guys have been playing together just a few weeks. Why did things come together so quickly, do you think, Cameron Crowe?
You know, nobody was writing songs like that in rock at the time. Mm-hmm. And Eddie Vedder wrote that song about a relationship that he did not have with his father. He discovered his real father was a family friend, or was introduced to him as a family friend while his father was alive. And it was a situation that was worked out after the death of his father. And this really had a deep impact on this guy, and he wrote these songs about his life and his feelings and his relationships, and they just poured out of him. And at the time, if you kind of go back into the history of rock, there were no songs like that. It was about
girls,
I'm on the road, baby,
cars.
You're not gonna see me tomorrow because I'm moving on, you know. And so here comes Eddie Vedder writing these songs about I'm still alive, your real daddy was dying. It's like it was so real and authentic that he and Cobain and many of the other musicians that were writing so soulfully and powerfully from their hearts, you know, took over the landscape of rock, and rightly so, I think.
Forget, I mean, you know, we know films like Almost Famous, Jerry Maguire, Vanilla Sky. What's your storytelling films? What's different about a documentary?
I tried to bring it together, and thanks for asking. It was we didn't want it to be a story of, you know, we made this album, then we made that album, then we made this album, and now here's the new album. Mm-hmm. I sort of wanted to approach Pearl Jam 20, because the guys were so kind of responsive and doing interviews that were deeply personal and stuff, I thought we should tell the story of lightning striking twice. This guy, Andy Wood, were it not for this first singer in this first band, Mother Love Bone, had he not kind of been sacrificed, you know, in an attempt to live a rock lifestyle that didn't work out for him, there would not be Pearl Jam that learned how to survive. And I thought, let's pay tribute to the first guy, and let's pay tribute to how he created a situation where Eddie and Pearl Jam are still here today. And there's a wonderful moment in the movie where Eddie goes back and sings one of Andy Wood's songs. When I interviewed Eddie Vedder for Rolling Stone in 1993, he said, one day I'm going to feel the time is right to sing the song, a song from Andy Wood. And 10 years later, he finally did it. And that moment is in the movie, and it's emotional. Yeah. And I wanted to do a movie where you felt that kind of emotion, too.
That Crown of Thorns?
Yeah, Crown of Thorns.
Yes. Good job, Scott.
Does a streak of staying together like 20 years, you know, for 20 years begin to wear in some ways after a while? Are you doing it just to keep the streak going, or is this a creative partnership that, you know, is this a very happy creative marriage?
It's kind of none of that and all of that. It is a marriage for sure. And part of, you know, Cameron's talking about their live performance and how great that is. The only reason that works is they don't do it for a year and a half solid. They go out for 3 weeks and take 2 months off, and, you know, and so it always is fresh. They don't really hang out when they're at home, except when they're in the creative process. And so it's always kind of fresh and new, and they aren't sick of each other.
I think we should go out on a song we played earlier from one of the first shows of Pearl Jam, but they're still playing it. Here it is, I guess, 2009, Philadelphia. So, Kelly Curtis, the joy is still there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because you never know where you're going to get that night. And this band is pushing the envelope all the time. I mean, this movie was enough of a chore, but continually pushing the envelope, it does not get boring at all. Oh, I have the best job, for sure.
Wow, what a good thing to say. Well, Kelly Curtis, thanks very much, the longtime manager of Pearl Jam, and Cameron Crowe, filmmaker, most recently the documentary Pearl Jam 20, and that film's going to premiere for one night, September 20th. It's going to play in theaters for a week, beginning September 23rd, and will be shown on the PBS series American Masters on October 21. Gentlemen, thank you both very much for being with us.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
Take care.
you can find out more about how Pearl Jam stayed alive at nprmusic.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.